Good morning, everybody. Welcome to a look forward and a look back at the World Cup action here on the Day-to-Day Live. Thank you very much for joining us, whether you're on YouTube, Twitch or Twitter, or, of course, if you're listening on the podcast afterwards. Matt Furness and I in the studio bright and early. Big smiles on our face this morning after England's triumph yesterday, but we'll come on to that in a little while. Don't forget, do head over to theanalyst.com when you're done here to take part in the Opta Challenge. All the matches today, we're asking you to make three predictions. If those predictions come true, then you could win $500. I think we had two winners on the games yesterday. No one, unsurprisingly, predicting a 6-2 victory in the England-Iran game. But the other games have plenty of people going into a prize draw to win, I believe.
Yeah, I think we had loads of winners. One at the Senegal-Netherlands game, and then, yeah, a few more for the Wales-USA game. Those scorelines a little bit more predictable than the 6-2. That was the first time ever there's been a 6-2 in a World Cup.
So, Scorigami, yeah. I got told. Scorigami, which really should be something we should really, you know, promote and push a bit more. But anyway, right, we're not going to look back at England anymore. We've got a great guest from Opta Jean coming on today, Alexandra, today, to help look ahead to the big game tonight in France versus Australia. How are we doing, Alex? You well? I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Matt to talk you through this one, but I think I'm going to leave you with this. I think this is the easiest way of doing it. Let's just look at the win probability for this game. Supercomputer in absolutely no doubt about who's taking the triumph in this one. France, 77.6% favourites to defeat Australia and get their World Cup campaign underway with the perfect start and hopefully reverse one of the most recent curses that has seen group stage winners, defending World Cup champions, crash out in the group stage. I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Matt and Alex as they look forward to today's big game.
Thank you.
So Alex, you're reigning World Cup champions in France. You opened the last tournament against Australia as well, didn't you, with a win?
Yeah, and it was quite difficult. It was quite a difficult group stage last time out. And to be honest, in France, we have many, many concerns. Even though Australia is not a big danger for us, we have many concerns as we have many injured players, as you may know. Lastly, Karim Benzema, of course. Our two midfielders from 2018, Pogba and N'Golo Kanté. You can add Christopher Nkunku, you can add Presley Kimpembe. So many concerns ahead of the first game. We probably have a pair of centre-backs who have nine games combined in France, seven for Upamecano and two for Konaté, because Raphaël Varane will probably be on the bench for the first game. So many concerns. We will probably play with the four-man defense for this tournament. I mean, it's 100% sure. Like in 2018, so you may think it's a great plan. But since the last Euro, we were used to play with a five-man defense. But Didier Deschamps, for this time, thought that we couldn't have the good wing-backs to play with five defenders. So we'll probably start with the four-man defense for the tournament.
And you talk about the absence of Benzema and Nkunku. Obviously, those two bring goals, just as Kylian Mbappe does as well. Mbappe is the top-scoring player across the top five European leagues in all competitions this year with 43 goals. But you're missing, what, 67-goal duo of Nkunku and Benzema there. Do you think, well, I think I know the answer to this, do you think Mbappe can handle the pressure of being the main source for goals? I know he has players like Antoine Griezmann alongside him as well. Do you think that he is the man who can get these goals to win you this tournament again?
I mean, it's pretty like it was the same case in 2018. He was obviously 4 years younger, and he proved to the world that he could handle such games, such a tournament. He scored in the final. I think, yeah, he's more mature. He has led PSG for maybe 2 or 3 years now. He is the real leader in PSG, even if playing with Neymar or Messi. So yeah, I think he will be the main player for France. He's one of the most experienced players, even though he's only 23. He will be 24 by the end of the year. I think he's one to watch. As you like to say it at the end, Alicia.
Would you? It's kind of. It seems like Mbappe is one of the players that actually will thrive with more attention on him. So with Benzema alongside him, it actually could have affected Mbappe's game a little bit.
And they know how to play with each other because they have exchanged a lot of assists since Benzema returned to the French team in 2021. That was a really good combination, the two of them. We will see how it goes with Giroud, because Giroud, who was not meant to be in this World Cup, he was not playing after the European Championship. He was not even in the French squad anymore. But he's done so much work with Milan, so Didier Deschamps had to call him back. And the thing is, well, he will be the starter at the front of the attack for at least the first game. So he will have the same role as in 2018, where he didn't score, and he was a big mock for this. But we have always in France mocked Giroud, but at the same time, Giroud has always proven that he could make his partner play, and especially Mbappé.
Well, Giroud is very popular in the UK. Very good Premier League career. Still a great player, aging like a fine wine. So he would become the oldest player, wouldn't he? In France, World Cup history.
Oldest player to play for France in the World Cup, and obviously the oldest man to score. And he recently became the oldest ever goal scorer for France a few months ago.
Okay, that'll be really interesting to watch. So do you see any threat from Australia in this game at all? Or do you actually think that, I'm not going to say this is a gimme, but the next two games will be the tougher games?
Yeah, and it was quite hard for us against Denmark. It would be the third time this year we'll face Denmark. We've met here twice this year before. It would be actually, I think, only the second time we face a team three times in a single calendar year. Quite difficult. We've lost against Denmark 2-0 in September. The main threat for us would be Denmark, because we know the importance in such a tournament to finish first, to be top of our group. Because if we don't make it top of our group, we'll probably face Argentina in last 16. But some of you may remember that we faced Argentina in last 16 in 2018 with a wonderful game, maybe one of our most wonderful games for years, with the final, of course, and the 4-3, and the goal of the tournament from Benjamin Pavard.
So are you worried about the curse of the reigning champion? Four of the last five have been knocked out in the group stage. Obviously, you talk about that form against Denmark, especially there in recent times. Are you a little bit worried about that in France?
Obviously, we know the stats, but we're not thinking about it because we still have many, many talented players. We have Hugo Lloris, who will probably become the most capped French player by the third game of the tournament. We still have player like, so we've talked about Mbappé, we've talked about Ousmane Dembélé. Maybe it's important to talk about him because 2 years ago he was not playing football anymore. He was not in the plans of Barcelona. Now he's probably the starter on the right side of the attack for France. We have obviously Antoine Griezmann, who has proved that he could take his role of leader. We still have players who play in the best club in the world, like Aurélien Tchouaméni, even though he's not experienced. Adrien Rabiot at the Juventus. So I think we should be able to be top of our group, but we've always struggled in the group phase. We did so in 2010. We did so in 2018. But at the end, we ended up to make the final and most recently to win the title.
And while I've got you here, obviously one of the other games today...
just fell. The flag just fell.
We knew that was going to happen. One of the other games today in the other group, as you talk about, that France could meet in the next round, Argentina play in the opening game of today against Saudi Arabia. Lionel Messi this season at PSG, his first season at PSG probably wasn't as successful as many people expected, but he's definitely performing this season in Paris, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he's maybe the relationship between Mbappe, Messi, and Neymar is outstanding this year. Messi is doing one of the best season ever. I mean, he can score or assist in every game. And he knows the importance of winning this title because obviously it will be his last World Cup. Everyone is looking about on those players who are going to play those their final World Cup, like Neymar, like Ronaldo, like Messi. So Messi is probably in one of his best shape ever. So maybe it's a good thing for him that the World Cup is played during the season because he's out of the top. It really on the top from the beginning of the season. He has, I think he probably has more than 10 and goal assists combined. I mean, 10 and 10, the double-double.
He's got 14 assists across all competitions. That's the most of any.
That's right. Thanks for the figure. Yeah. I think actually that the fact that the World Cup is in the middle of the season could be a good a thing for Lionel Messi, yeah. Yeah, and I think he scored a treble a few weeks ago with Argentina. So,
yeah, he comes into something in great form. We've actually got a few records here that he could break in this tournament or could break today. So, if he scores today, he will equal his record of goals in a calendar year for Argentina. And he's one goal. He's currently on 11. He'll equal the 12 scored in 2012. He could become the first player to play in 5 World Cups for Argentina, and he will be the first player to score in 4 different World Cups for Argentina, should he score at this tournament. It's likely you'd think that against Saudi Arabia, it's probably Argentina's best chance of a win in the group stage. Messi could start the tournament on fire and he could actually win a second Golden Ball Award, player of the tournament this tournament. He won it in 2014 as Argentina lost in the final to Germany.
And he probably just wants to make history, you know. He's one of the greats. He's playing his last World Cup. He wants to prove once for all that he is the best player of all time, if not the second or third one. But yeah, he has to prove something once for all. He has been really criticized, as you said, when he came to PSG. Even though last year he made many assists. This year, I mean, if I look at his record most recently, he has scored or assists in 12 of these last 40 games. And it's not just one goal involvement. It's usually 2, 3, or even 4. He's in good shape, really good shape. He has to prove something. And I think he will probably be one of the players of the tournament.
Yeah, and we talk about Messi's record in World Cups previously. Obviously, he became the first player to score in 4 different World Cups for Argentina. He has never scored a knockout stage goal at the World Cup in 756 minutes of action.
He had many opportunities, yeah.
He has, yeah, 23 shots. He's also got the most expected goals total of a player that hasn't scored since 2006 in the World Cup in the knockout stages. So that's something for Messi to try and break this year. Thank you for joining us today, Alex. I hope
Pleasure.
You enjoy the game tonight. It should be a good match against Australia. I personally think that France will win comfortably tonight. What do you think?
We always say that, so let's wait and see. I mean, if we could take the example of England yesterday, that would be good for us.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be
definitely
good.
So.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Alex. Real pleasure to join us today. Thanks, buddy. As ever, you can head over to theanalyst.com right now and you can take part in the Opta Challenge. Matt and I are probably just going to roll through it very quickly. The questions for the France game today. I said I didn't have these ready. I did have them ready. So, final score today between France and Australia. What are you going for, Matt?
4-0 France.
Cool. See, funny, I had a little chat with some of the team out in Qatar today and they say they reckon Australia are going to get maybe one in this from a set piece. I'm not.
Are they Australian?
Yes. So that'll be why they're suggesting that one. So, 3-0 France for me. Do you know what? I'm actually going to bring in our other guest that we've got coming up to look back over yesterday's games very briefly now. Duncan Alexander here with us as well today. Hello, Duncan. You well?
Hello. Yeah. Good morning. I've got a sore throat, but that's just World Cup fever, right?
Yeah, but we're 3 days into World Cup and all three of us are ill, which is...
you don't get this in the summer, do you?
Yeah. So to be fair, at least it's blue skies here in England today, because at least I'm not looking out and it's just miserable, relentless rain that we're all having to put up with. So what are you going for, final score in France-Australia today, Dan?
I don't think Australia will score. I think France might be quite slow. I mean, I said this about England, that didn't work, did it? So, yeah, I think like 2-0. 3-0.
Good stuff. Okay. Mm. How many shots on target are we going for in this game? These are the questions in the Opta Challenge today for this game. So this is tough. Like,
tough because, like, you think back yesterday, the Senegal-Netherlands game struggled for shots on target. And you probably wouldn't have thought that before the game. And that is the magic of our low scoring sport, isn't it? Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, I think France will have quite a few. I reckon 9.
Yeah, I'm double figures. I'm 10 maybe for this one today.
I'll go higher, 11.
All right, Brucey. Yeah. And finally, I think this is a great one. Will Australia score more goals than Kylian Mbappe in this match?
No. Absolutely not.
No.
I think we all see Mbappe probably scoring, and we all see Australia not scoring. So
that's the embarrassment about this French squad. It's like they've got so many good players injured, yet their team is still really good, which is just ridiculous.
I mean, with Benzema now out, obviously Mbappe has complained about playing as a number nine this season for PSG, but he probably will have to do that a little bit more now for this as well. So, you know,
If Giroud plays. Yeah. Today, then he could play a bit deeper.
But Drew's so handsome that they'll distract the Australians, and then Mbappe will just clean up with a hat.
Unless Jason Cummins reinvents his wrestling moves from old and takes him down. Yeah.
It's yourself, Grado. He's going to score today. I want to see a celebration. That's the most important thing. But yeah, I think actually we should be talking about the scoreline in the Argentina game that kicks off. I reckon we could be getting 6 or 7 there. Argentina are my favourites. Everyone's favourites since this World Cup. I'm really excited to see them play today.
We're not... Yeah.
Most people's favourites. But I just think Argentina... I know Saudi... I actually think Saudi Arabia will have a decent tournament. I don't think that we'll have to a great start today.
Okay.
I think Saudi Arabia... We talked about it in the preview, didn't we? Actually, they've had a lot of preparation. They've got He-Man in charge, Hervranar. White shirt game today with big Harry Hill collars from Herb Renner. I'm expecting that's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
He's one of the most stylish managers in the game. Obviously, famously took Zambia to an emotional AFCON a few years back. So, he's an icon. Our colleagues in the Data of Swimmers just dropped in that it's Saudi Arabia's second oldest starting 11 for a World Cup game after they're opening the game against Russia. Four years ago, and that obviously ended 5-0 to Russia. Mm. So
that went well for you as well, Matt, didn't it?
Yeah, told everyone that they watch the Saudi Arabia team. They're quite decent, actually. I reckon they'll shock Russia in this game. They lost 5-0.
Let's not forget there are two other World Cup games. We just didn't have time to dive into them deeply with the 10 o'clock kickoff UK time coming up as well. Denmark kicking off their campaign against Tunisia, and maybe the start of Mexico's run to the final. I don't know. I'm just making this as their biggest supporter.
Well, they're your dark horses. Denmark are a lot of people's dark horse as well. A few people have said Denmark can get far into this tournament. Semi-finals, I mean, possibly final.
They got to the semis of the Euros, so that's a pale horse, not a dark horse.
Euros is a lot easier than the World Cup.
That's proven by Wales. No, sorry. Right then, let's get looking back over yesterday's fixtures very quickly. And quite simply, a stunning start for England in this tournament. We were sat here yesterday going, this is going to be a cagey one. 1-0, 2-1, going to struggle to break down Iran. Really, it was dominance. I don't think there's any other way of describing that. It was such a relieving performance to see. There was a little bit of moment when the keeper got injured. There was a little moment for Iran there. But after that, it was just... A really pleasing performance on the eye from England.
Well, I think coming into this tournament, obviously everyone knows England were in bad form, and there were sort of some general concerns that I think people had about England under Southgate, which were possibly overcautious in games, you know, not attacking as much as they should with the talent they've got, and also being reluctant to sort of make substitutions and change it up. And I think yesterday, you know, whether it was deliberate or not, he very much... you know, changed from that blueprint from before. And, you know, the fact that Marcus Rashford came on and scored, you know, in less than 50 seconds after coming on was nice for him, but also really, you know, I think we're going to see substitutions as such a key thing in this tournament because with the insane amounts of injury time that have been, you know, 24 minutes, obviously there was a big injury to the Iran keeper in this game, but you know, even the second half there was 10, and that went up to 12 really because of the penalty. So, It is going to be a squad game like never before. And England, you know, maybe don't have the best squad, but they probably have the best depth in all positions, or particularly in attacking positions. You know, the subs they were able to bring on yesterday, like, you know, Grealish, Foden, Rashford, it's good. So, and, you know, I think you saw the impact of that result on the Wales-USA game later in the day, because they kind of knew that losing that game was going to be a disaster, because, you know, that gives the other team in that game a big advantage. So, you know, they're both still in it, but it puts England in a very strong position, yeah.
Yeah, the co-commentator yesterday for BBC said that England looked like a club side the way they were playing. I agree with that. I thought that they looked like they knew their roles exactly. Like, they really prepped for that game. And I was worried for that game. I thought we'd struggle to break Iran down. Did not expect us to score 6 goals. And arguably, I'm ignoring XG here, but I thought we could have had more. I thought that we were so dominant. And I thought Declan Rice, Jude Bellingham, both of them were exceptional yesterday. And I know Iran are a good side, but they're not going to be as good as teams that we'll face later in the competition. That's going to be the interesting. If we can see Rice and Bellingham stamp their authority on those kind of games, it'd be really interesting to see. Because Rice had a great Euros as well. I thought he was probably our best player in the final against Italy as well. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see how far we can go in this tournament. I think that, well, if we beat the USA, I think we already qualify, don't we? Yeah. We could already qualify by then.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we just need to win one of our last two games and it looks positive.
I mean, we know that obviously recent teams that do win the World Cup, you have to kind of win your group. It doesn't, you know, no one comes second and wins it. So it would be nice to come top. But yeah, I think you're right. Rice and Bellingham's a really good combination. Obviously, the two fullbacks I pointed out before the tournament in my 10 predictions thing that, you know, Kieran Trippier had the most sequence involvements for England at the last World Cup, and obviously, you know, it was really good yesterday. Luke Shaw was really good as well. You know, formerly the youngest England player at a World Cup back in 2014, you know, 8 years on, a much more mature player. And you can see there that he had the most attacking sequence involvements in the game. And then Bellingham in second place, or joint second place. I mean, he was just, you know, 19 years old, younger than Grand Theft Auto Vice City, and yet he's bossing World Cup games. And then the sort of the options up front, as well, I think Jordan Pickford was a bit annoyed at the central defence a few times, and I know Harry Maguire had a good attacking game, and then obviously had to go off with a, you know, possible concussion / illness. But he did lose his runner a couple of times, so I think that is the concern, I think. But
yeah, the first goal, lost the man. The second, I mean, it was never a penalty, was it? The last one.
It was a penalty, but then if that was a penalty, then the Maguire one in the first half.
That was worth 3 penalties, that one.
It was a sort of like consolation penalty, which I'm not against, to be honest. Quite like
one
it.
For the fans.
6-2 is a good scoreline as well, you know.
Scorigami, as we mentioned earlier on in the show, like first ever time in World Cup history there's been a 6-2. And I don't want to labour the point too much about the what Matt mentioned about how they look like a club side. That to me, I mean, how much of an effect is this on the likes of Klopp and Guardiola coming into the Premier League, and how much this is now in this England side? You've got Trippier on one side. If you would have said to me before the game, Luke Shaw arguably had one of his best games in an England jersey, just being attacking down that wing, giving so many options, not being afraid to play. You're seeing Harry Kane was running into playing at times. Like, this is... It's been a long time in coming, but it almost feels like it's 10 years in the making of this not being afraid, going into an international tournament, playing a Premier League style and trying to come away with victories and results. That felt that we're now at this point where we're going to go, hey, we're not afraid anymore. We're going to go on an international stage and play what we know from a club level.
Well, there was a 10-year plan, wasn't there, for the 2022 World Cup to be this sort of flowering of talent. And, you know, obviously we won some youth World Cups and things like that. And that sort of generation is now old enough to dominate this team in a lot of ways. So it's been a long time. You know, it has been a lot of preparation, and you can see it in the amount of talent that is in, you know, grassroots football now across the country. And, you know, as someone who has a kid who plays at that level, you know, grassroots sort of under 12s level, you know, well, I remember being a kid and, you know, as soon as you got the ball, the manager would be like, get rid of it, get rid. And now that doesn't happen. You know, people are comfortable on the ball and in possession. And yeah, you pulled up the Jack Grealish goal there. I mean, that is a... I thought it's one of the most pleasing goals ever, in a sense, because Callum Wilson, you know, in his first and probably only ever World Cup, with a chance to score, and then so unselfish to pull it back to Grealish, you know, his Miguel Almiron's mate, and then Grealish doing the celebration that he'd promised the kid. It was, you know, that in terms, we don't do expected pleasingness, but if we did, I think that would be, yeah, that would be 0.997 at least.
We should talk about Wales as well last night. I think they, at half time, I think we all expected USA to kick on. Wales just weren't in the game at all. But bringing on Kiefer Moore changed the style of their play. They became uglier, but it worked to a treat because USA couldn't really handle Moore's presence up there. It allowed players like Bale to get into the game a bit more. John Hartson also said on CoComs that they looked like a club side. Not sure what club side, probably Crystal Palace because they win the most points from winning.
Manchester City maybe? I don't know.
I mean, yeah. Hartson also said, don't hit it to the big man. Which I thought, well, you're John Hartson. I mean, that goes against, you know.
Hartson is my favourite co-commentator because he's so emotional. He sounds like he's going to cry every time Wales attack. And when Wales scored, he was choking up, which was, it was nice to hear.
Yeah. No, it's good. But you're right. They were awful in the first half. That was one of the worst first half performances I've seen.
Were they awful or were USA good? I couldn't figure it out.
USA were good. Yeah, they pressed really well, and you know they're
wing backs. They bombed on, and they stopped doing that completely in the second half.
It was really weird. It was almost like they played 45 minutes and went, job done, guys. Let's hold this on. And it's like, no,
this is Wales. Yeah, not club side.
Wales were there for the take. I do think it's something US might look at if they do end up crashing out of this tournament. Like their timidness in that second half, just that's going to come back and bite them. That's a game they should have put to bed 2-0, and then they're in a great position. Because let's face it, they're probably going to, I would argue, with a victory in that game, they beat Iran in the next game. And all of a sudden, they're on 6 points. Well, they could beat Iran, sorry, in that last game. Obviously, they're not going to win against England in the next game.
Don't say that.
But it's the sort of thing where it's like, actually, that Iran game at the end now becomes extremely nervy for them, when actually they could have really made it a bit more comfortable if they'd just been, continued to press, continued to put the pressure on, rather than what it turned into, which was Josh Sargent got replaced by Bob Mortimer in a wig in the second half, I think.
Sargent just wasn't used really at all in that game. He was isolated. But we actually saw kind of that in a few games yesterday. Senegal's striker was quite isolated. Harry Kane at stages was fairly isolated. He wasn't involved too much until he dropped a bit deeper. It was interesting just to see how Wales got back into the game purely on passion alone, I think. But I definitely, as an England fan, do not want to go into that last game against Wales needing a win.
No, very nervy if so. We'll very quickly look over Senegal versus the Netherlands. Matt was writing this one up on theanalyst.com for us, and I think for about 75, 80 minutes was tearing his hair about what he was going to write about this
game. I'd written the article with 5 minutes to go or 10 minutes to go on a 0-0, thinking some quite good stats here because there's been no shots. Netherlands aren't really doing anything at all. And then, obviously, they get two late goals.
Wasn't it going to be the first time Netherlands had never had a shot on target in a World Cup game in recorded history, which, as you all know, is 1966.
The last time they had no shot on target in international was when they went out in the Euros as well against the Czech Republic. It was a bit, I don't know, it was just, I thought Senegal were unlucky. I thought they deserved something from that game, and I thought they'd play quite well.
Yeah, I mean, Senegal
was excellent for them.
Yeah, I mean, as you pointed out, he looked a different player to the Watford star in some respects. But, I mean, Senegal had the biggest Sadio Mane-shaped hole I've seen.
Didier played well up top, but he didn't look a goal threat, did he? He looked like an attacking midfielder playing.
Mane's world-class, and he's one of the top, you know, four or five forwards in the world, I'd say. And, you know, that would have made the difference, I think. But I honestly think this World Cup's so strange in the sense that most of these teams didn't have warm-up games. They've come straight from league football, you know, with different managers, different, you know, training, etc. I think the first games are going to be quite odd in a lot of cases. And I think that it'll be sort of take two or three games for a lot of teams to really, obviously not England, but take quite a lot of teams to hit their stride. So I think it's easy to, we all know that one game is not a huge data set, but I think it's going to be quite, the first games we'll look back on and go, that wasn't very telling.
one unique record we'll just very briefly mention yesterday. Louis van Gaal becoming the third oldest manager of a game at World Cup. If they go all the way, might just get...
No, if they get to the semis, he'll pass Tabarez. Yeah, that's... I worked that one out yesterday.
Which is a great scene for him.
What happens if someone... Because, you know, we saw 98 three managers sacked mid-tournament. What if Switzerland sack their manager and bring in Roy Hodgson, who they've had before? Then
Roy Hodgson wouldn't take a job again, would he?
I was more thinking...
I don't want to see Roy Hodgson again.
I'd like to see him manage in Switzerland.
Enjoy your retirement, Roy.
I didn't make the most of it in 1994, so I think I'm ready to enjoy it now.
I'm more curious. Uruguay lose one game and then Tabarez comes back because they just need to get the spirit of Tabarez back on the side. So you could see potentially that one happening. Obviously, Uruguay get their campaign underway in a couple of days' time. So I did the preview for that against South Korea. They're coming up on Thursday.
Qatar could appoint Otto Rehhagel.
I mean, you lose Carlos Quiroz. You will lose Carlos Quiroz randomly running down the sideline trying to whip up the crowd whilst they're defending a corner, which I think
that's
was
a Ran belly.
That's a Ran
different team.
Illness is kicking in on the World Cup. We just cut that out of the edit. It's fine. Right then, I think that just about wraps it up for today. We are less than half an hour away from kickoff in the first game of the day as the 4 days of World Cup action begin. Four games a day of World Cup action begin. It's a feast of football, but goodness me, starter, main course and dessert all coming at once for today.
It's 9:30 in the morning in the UK, and given the amount of injury time that we know is coming down the line, it's going to be 9:30 in the evening before everything's finished later. So here we go, 12 hours.
We're going to see over 400 minutes of action today, which is,
Yeah, which is more than I see as a Wickham fan in an entire season.
I was saying, has the ball been in play for 400 minutes for Wickham this season? Yeah.
Who cares about ball in play? It's, you know, keep your ball boys exercising.
And also, got to say this as well. I don't know if people have seen about Falkland trying to get to all of the Premier League, all the World Cup matches at the tournament. This injury time could kill him. He's going to be walking out of games early.
He left the England game early. He missed the penalty yesterday.
That doesn't count. He needs to watch every minute of every game. He can't just be. I mean, no, that's a bit harsh. But quite a record that one is. Okay. I think we'll wrap it up there for today. Thanks very much for watching across YouTube, Twitter and Twitch. And of course, those of you listening to our ramblings on the podcast as well. Really great to see good podcast download numbers flying in for this one. You can, of course, keep up to date with all from the tournament with us on theanalyst.com, where you can also take part in the Opta Challenge and later on tonight, the Opta Quiz at 16:30 GMT. Duncan Alexander in the hot seat tonight. £3,000.
That is a rollover and a half.
It's an awful thing for a man who can't say his looks correctly to say as well. So that's a real challenge for me there. And also, don't forget, you can, of course, keep up to date with all the best of our stuff across social media as well at Opta Analyst Twitter. There's loads of great content. TikTok, we're doing previews of each and every game. And for some reason, the best performing video so far, Mexico versus Poland. It really is a bizarre tournament, this one, 2022. Right then, we will see you tomorrow for yet another Day-to-Day Live at 9 o'clock in the morning, or of course, if you're listening on the podcast, catch up whenever you can. But from all of us here, from Duncan, from Matt, and from Alex earlier on as well, take care, have a good day, enjoy your World Cup feast.